Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Professor Henry Louis Gates has done a lot to deepen our understanding of the human experience in modern literature by deepening our understanding of the African-American experience, and his recent documentaries, Tracing American Ancestries, Celebrity Ancestries, have brought a huge, humane breath of fresh air to our national conversation about who we are. Now, some critics of President Obama have taken the roots conversation in a completely different direction. This hour on Point, Henry Louis Gates on our first black president and what roots mean now. You can join the conversation. Why are we so fascinated with our roots? How much do our genealogies tell us about who we are as individuals today? And how is this country dealing with the roots and reality of President Barack Obama? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In the studio with me now is Henry Louis Gates, Jr., professor and director of Harvard's W.E.B. Du Bois Institute for African and African-American Research. He's worn many hats over the course of his career: literary critic, scholar, writer, editor, public intellectual, journalist. He's the author of numerous books, most recently Faces of America and Tradition and the Black Atlantic, Critical Theory in the African Diaspora. He's hosted several public television series, including Faces of America and African American Lives, Parts 1 and 2. Henry Louis Gates, welcome. It's great to have you back.
Thanks. Nice to be back on the program.
So here we are. We just wanted to talk to you. Here's Dinesh D'Souza. Has this big piece everybody's talking about in Forbes magazine, where he's linking President Obama's view of the world to the fact that his father was Kenyan, came up in the period of Kenyan anti-colonialism, and says, you know, to understand President Obama, you've got to understand the view of a Luo tribesman in the 1950s. Now, here you are celebrating roots. Here's a critic of the president with this really kind of, I don't know, racially tinged critique. This is the otherness characterization. What do you think of this stream of the American conversation right now?
Well, Tom, I haven't had the pleasure of reading Dinesh's latest diatribe against multiculturalism and President Obama, but I will certainly do that as soon as I am not busy anymore. But it sounds as if he is making a terrible mistake, which is biologizing or essentializing culture. In effect, saying that because President Obama's father was Luo, you know, one of the two great ethnic groups in Kenya, that his worldview is informed through his genes by his father's ethnic makeup.
Never mind, this is a father he barely knew, ever met.
And that is frankly ridiculous. So we can't take that seriously. Just because you're descended from Swedes, it doesn't mean you want to have gravlax for breakfast every day, right? Or reindeer for lunch. You know, it's ridiculous.
Quite true. You call it ridiculous, but you know at the same time how it gets into the discourse of American politics. We've played this before on this show, but I want to play it again just for a second. Here's Newt Gingrich. This is at a National Review function, and he's talking about this. You'll hear. He's saying this president is so outside our comprehension that you can't only understand him unless you look at Kenyan anti-colonial behavior. It's a little tough to hear. It's at a reception, but listen.
What if he is so outside our comprehension that only if you understand Kenyan anti-colonial behavior can you begin to piece together, and that's the most accurate predictive model for his behavior?
But where have we heard this before in our lifetime? I was born in 1950. Mm-hmm. The election for president, 1960, John F. Kennedy. People demonized Roman Catholics in the same way. There were so many jokes in my elementary school. Now, remember, I grew up in Appalachia, eastern West Virginia on the Potomac River. There weren't a lot of Roman Catholics in the state of West Virginia, though our town had a fair number, being an Irish-Italian paper mill town. But I remember the jokes in elementary school. If President Kennedy's elected, they're going to change the country's motto from "In God We Trust" to "In the Pope We Hope."
Yes.
And all sorts of things. It's demonization. And it's demonization through othering, saying this person is not one of us. He is a them. He is a they. And if we let him in, our whole circumstances of life will be upturned like an apple cart.
But this president is in, and I'm so curious about that, because this country really celebrated, most of it, overwhelmingly, with pride at the election of its first African-American president. We all remember that. I mean, that was very emotional, big stuff. And now, you know, you're writing in your book about how, you know, at some of these rallies, you've got President Obama placards depicting him as a Sambo-like version of the Joker or Adolf Hitler in blackface. Mm. That is a minority. Nevertheless, how do you see us actually handling the fact of this presidency, this president?
Well, when you said that the country celebrated ecstatically on the night of the election, some of the country celebrated ecstatically.
But an awful lot. I mean, not everybody, but an awful lot of people.
An awful lot of people did, but an awful lot of people didn't. And America has a long history of wrestling with its demons. And we have many demons in this country. And one of our most resilient demons is anti-black racism. It's a legacy of slavery and of Jim Crow segregation. The idea that we live in a post-racial society because Barack Obama was elected president is absurd. I thought that whoever made the claim initially was making an observation not based on data, not based on any sense of experience that I've had in my 60 years as an American. We're a deeply race-conscious, gender-conscious, religion-conscious society, and the election of one man to the White House does not change that overnight. It reflects a certain change in attitudes and that very positive changes, but it does not reflect a revolution in racial attitudes in the history of this country, unfortunately.
So help us sort this out. I mean, you've been talking in your public television special, Faces of America, in your book of the same name. You're talking with a lot of really interesting people here. Mm-hmm. You know, Meryl Streep and Stephen Colbert and Yo-Yo Ma and Eva Longoria and right on. You know, they're talking there about how important roots are and the impact of that on their lives. Here's from your documentary, here's you talking with Meryl Streep about what ancestors give us as individuals today and her saying the past is still within us.
Do you think that our ancestors shape who we are?
We are nothing but them. And as an actor, I'm always trying to call up lives. I think we are the sum of all the people that have lived before us.
We are nothing but them, our ancestors. I can see Dinesh D'Souza jumping all over this and saying, okay, there you go. Luo Tribesman, 1957, boom.
Well, we traced Meryl Streep's ancestors back to her eighth great-grandfather. She thought she was Jewish. Someone came up to her after a performance in London and said that because her name was Streep, that's Dutch, of course, for stripe. And he thought that she was descended from Jewish people in Holland. Well, and so she walked around with this idea in her head. Mm-hmm, but it turns out when we did her genealogy, we traced her back to her eighth great-grandfather, Johann Jakob Streib, which is pronounced Streep in German, who was born in 1607 in Lofenau, Germany. Now, that's one line. Another line, her eighth great-grandfather, English, Lawrence Wilkinson, one of the founding fathers of Rhode Island. And then the Wilkinsons go on down to Pennsylvania and become the founding fathers of Pennsylvania as well, with a land grant from William Penn, and play an active role in the Constitutional Convention. Her ancestor knew Benjamin Franklin, a big, prominent Quaker family.
Quakers in the family line.
Right. So which line, according to Dinesh D'Souza, is she? Is she a German Lutheran? Is she an English dissenting Quaker? If biological determinism was really coded in our genes, which it's not. Meryl was speaking metaphorically. I think that the reason that
we are the sum of all the people that have lived before us.
Right, and the sum means you have dozens and dozens and dozens of ancestors. And if you add all those up and divide them by the denominator, I guess, you're 10% or 1% of these 1,000 people.
Or you name it.
But the idea that we are determined by our ancestors is completely unacceptable, and I can't imagine anyone with a straight face saying that. Again, it goes back to biological determinism, and I thought that we had pretty much left that behind.
It sounds very 19th century, let alone 20th.
It sounds very
21st.
It sounds very German, circa 1945.
Yeah, hello.
And let us hope that we can put aside that kind of race thinking, because that's what it is. And it doesn't matter if it's applied to black people, if it's applied to people by their choice of religion, Jewish people, mm-hmm. or Muslim people, or Roman Catholics, or Irish people who were demonized in the same way that blacks were when they came here. These are all forms of stereotyping, which are and these forms of stereotyping should be abhorrent to anyone who loves truth and justice and freedom.
How do you think this country is doing overall with this history-making president, president of color? What are we now, a year and going on 2 years in?
Wow, that's a tough question. I think that, you know, to quote Dickens, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times. The best of times because we have a black president. And we have more black elected officials than we ever had. We have a larger black middle class than we've ever had. But on the other hand, I was watching Jimmy Carter last night mm-hmm. on Larry King. And he said he has never seen an America more divided, a more divided Congress, not even Abraham Lincoln's Congress, than the Congress is today. People, he said, who've just taken a pledge to vote against anything, no matter how good, no matter how meritorious Barack Obama and the Democrats come up with.
Is that division racial, or is race just a tool, one tool in the combat over those dividing lines? Or?
Oh, I think that race is an element without a doubt, but I think that, Tom, people are terrified. I think that we're living in such an age of uncertainty, and no one knows what the future can bring. People feel economically vulnerable, which affects their psychological state.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with scholar, journalist, and Black Studies star Henry Louis Gates about our first African-American president and what roots mean now. He's author of Faces of America. He's author of Tradition and the Black Atlantic, Critical Theory in the African Diaspora. We'll talk about that. You may have seen his public television series, including Faces of America and African-American Lives. He's been talking with some really interesting people about their roots. Here's Stephen Colbert saying from Faces of America with Henry Louis Gates that he's not sure that his ancestors really have that much to do with who he is now.
When I was pretty young, I used to think, oh, yeah, I shouldn't look for greatness in my past, even as nice as it would be to be the descendant of Jean-Baptiste Colbert, you know? So I don't feel informed by my ancestors, like, who I am, but it's so great to know what they went through that I should exist.
But a big piece in Forbes magazine right now, Dinesh D'Souza, very conservative, saying if you want to understand this president, you've got to understand Luo tribesmen in the 1950s. Colin Powell was talking about all these characterizations of the president over the weekend on Meet the Press. And here he is talking about the former Secretary of State responding to some of the kind of statements. David Gregory had played the same audio tape of Newt Gingrich talking at the National Review about the president's what he called Kenyan anti-colonial behavior. Here's Colin Powell.
I would just tell my fellow Americans, think carefully about what was just said. Think carefully about some of the stuff that is coming across the blogs and the airways. Let's make a couple of points. One, the president was born in the United States of America. Let's get rid of that one. Let's get rid of the birther thing. Let's attack him on policy, not nonsense. Next, he is a Christian. He is not a Muslim. 20% of the people say he is a Muslim. 80% apparently do not believe he's a Muslim.
31% of Republicans say he's a Muslim.
Well, surprise, surprise.
And then Colin Powell went on to talk in particular about this assertion that to understand this president, you have to understand his African ancestry.
And I think we have to be careful when we take things like Dinesh D'Souza's book, which is the source of all of this, and suggest that somehow the president of the United States is channeling his dead father through some Kenyan spirits. This doesn't make any sense. Mr. Gingrich does these things from time to time with a big, bold statement. He did it with Sotomayor. She's a reverse racist. He did it with Elena Kagan. She ought to be taken off the nomination for Supreme Court Justice. And he does it occasionally to make news and also stir up dust.
Henry Louis Gates Jr. is with us. Who better to look at all this? What are you thinking as you hear this?
Just reminds me why I wish Colin Powell had run for president at the time. He's such a wise man. Listen, what Colin just said was, in effect, our ancestors inform who we are, but they don't determine who we are, and anyone who thinks that is foolish. starting with Dinesh D'Souza. So I think the larger question, since that's obviously so silly, is why this sort of specious argument would be resonant. And again, I think it's because people are so frightened. Racism, excuse me, has always been a function of economic scarcity, economic relationships.
Who's going to get what? And whatever lever you can get your hand on to fight for peace.
How much water's in this cup, mm-hmm. Tom? If I drink three sips, that's three sips less for you. And all of a sudden, we figure out symbolic or metaphorical ways to mask what we're really arguing about. And what's an obvious one to do is race because of physical differences. And the more obviously different the other is from us, the easier it is to demonize them. So hence the history of anti-black racism in the West. And now we see it manifesting itself in this with the luau in East Africa, the Kenya, which, and there's just one step to the word, two words, Mau Mau, of course, implied in this relationship.
So the rebel movement there in colonial times.
Yeah, and it's
but here's Obama disgusting. With, I mean, his mother, I don't know what any of this matters, but there's his mother who's white, his grandparents who raised him, Kansas white as you can be.
The true triumph of our democracy, is our genetic and genealogical diversity. Mm-hmm. No one is pure. No one is pure. And our identities are shaped in relationships to other identities, to our environment. What else could Barack Obama be but an American from Hawaii with, albeit, an African father who was absent most of the time in his life, and a very present and loving WASP, white American mother. That's what he is. But we're all a hodgepodge. One of the great things about doing my series, I give everyone three DNA tests. Mm-hmm. We test your father's line, mm-hmm. if you're a man. If you're a woman, we get your brother or a male lineal descendant from a paternal ancestor. We test everyone's mother's line, and then we give a fun test that people call the pie chart, which is your admixture. And the moral of the story
is all the sources of origin, all the regions of origin.
All the sources of origin. Mm-hmm. European, African, Asian, mm-hmm. back 500 years. Mm-hmm. But if you go back, and for many of the people that we test, there's tremendous amount of diversity. If you go back beyond 500 years, there's diversity for everybody because we all descended from a handful of Ethiopians who walked out of what is now Ethiopia about 50,000 years ago. So we have genetic diversity inscribed in our DNA. And it would be good if we could make all school children understand fundamental genetics, because it would inform, I think,
yes.
our sense of citizenship. We have the moral of my series is that when the lights went down, everybody everywhere was getting down with everybody else. That's the way it's been in the past, and that's the way it will be in the future. And these claims to ethnic purity are not only wrongheaded, they are dangerous. And I think they are immoral.
You can take that very long view, 50,000 years walking out of Ethiopia, and that's great, and that's true, and I'm with you. Teach everybody genetics. It is absolutely fascinating. At the same time, we come to a society with the faces that we have, and people judge and assess and are prejudiced along those lines. So here's this president with his face and his ancestry, and his fate is to come into a time, you said, you know, fear makes this tougher on the race front, but his fate is to come into a time of significant economic crisis. How do you think his presidency, his leadership, his relationship with the country has been affected by the face he shows the country?
Well, I think that Bob Herbert has an interesting column in Today's Times. Mm-hmm. And it's about, he implies that he believes that President Obama made a decision to transcend race once he was elected, to create an illusion that—
Tamp it down, barely talk about it.
Don't talk about it. If you don't talk about it, it won't be used against me. If you don't talk about it, it won't become divisive. And I think that that was absolutely the wrong thing to do. We do not live in a post-racial society. Anyone who thinks that just hasn't been functioning in the same America that you and I have been for our lifetime. And just because he's elected doesn't make all of this sordid history of race and racism go away.
But just not talking about it doesn't make it go away either. It's in the streets. It's in this D'Souza discourse. How much tougher has it made his job to face this time of fear, this time of crisis?
How much tougher has what?
Has President Obama's African-American-ness, which we celebrated at his election, made his job of trying to lead the country in a time of fear and crisis in particular.
Oh, I think there could be little doubt that the fact, his fact of blackness has been seized upon by anyone on the right who opposes him and wants a vibrant symbol that resonates at a gut level throughout the country. So it's being used to dastardly purposes, as I think all of us could agree. The question is, what do we do about? And the question is, what does the president do about it?
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with Bob Herbert in his suggestion this morning that the president has to do the reverse of what he's doing. He has to stand on the firm foundation of his African-American heritage, his mixed heritage, not pretend it doesn't exist, be proud of it, in the same way that John Kennedy was proud of being of Roman Catholic and of Irish descent, not to run away from it, not to say this delimits me, that this completely defines me, but this is the base on which I stand. And it is an inescapable fact of my identity, and I'm proud of it. And that's a better way than pretending that the race problem has been solved and we live in a post-racial society.
It's all there. We're all watching it play out. Henry Louis Gates is with us today to talk about it. Let's go to our listeners, if we may. Lexington, Kentucky. Anthony, you're on the air with Henry Louis Gates, Jr., sir.
Hi, how you doing, Dr. Gates?
Hey, Anthony.
I'm Reverend Anthony Everett. I'm with the United Methodist Church and Associate Director for African American Ministries for the state of Kentucky. And in all of this discussion about race, my theological upbringing tells me that race is a false construct, and that to identify someone based on race is a misnomer. It's something that we shouldn't be doing. There's a lot of talk about a post-racial society, but what I'm more interested in is a post-racist society, one in which we're not so much concerned about the president's heritage from the standpoint of it being something that's scary to people, but something that's embraced and that's understood as this is a strength that he has, just as you and I have a different strength, that our ancestry, the things that informed us before us, strengthen us and have made us the persons that we are.
Mm-hmm. So I agree with you, Reverend, and I like that formation, a post-racist society. But we're a long way from Cornel West, my dear friend, once wrote that we're all recovering racists and anti-Semites and sexists, and we are. And that's the beginning of wisdom, to recognize that. Mm-hmm. Look, cultural identities have histories. It's a famous line from the British cultural theorist Stuart Hall. And individuals have histories. We can't act as if we come from nowhere, that we're not standing on some kind of cultural or ethnic foundation. Of course we are. But if we allow that to be the principal criterion in our definition of ourselves or our state of being or how we operate in the world, I think that is a grave, grave error. Or we allow ourselves to be defined by others that way. And that's what Dinesh D'Souza and Newt are trying to do with this myth of Luau origins, which they are imposing on Barack Obama.
It's quite incredibly, D'Souza writes in this Forbes piece, book coming, incredibly, he writes, quoting, quote, incredibly, the U.S. is being ruled according to the dreams of a Luau tribesman of the 1950s, this philandering, inebriated African socialist who raged against the world, this is Barack Obama's father, for denying him the realization of his anti-colonial ambitions, is now setting the nation's agenda through the reincarnation of his dreams in his son.
Yeah, but look at how much time already in the last half hour we've had to give to this drivel. And why? Why? I mean, why would such absurd assertions resonate with the American people right now? That's what fascinates me.
I'm kind of hoping they don't. Yet they're out there, and we can see echoes of this in the street. It's not as though it doesn't find reverb.
Well, I think that people are growing tired of claiming that he's a Muslim, and so now they're going to make him a tribal. What is it? A tribal, inebriated, philandering
father,
African?
Yeah, blah, 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 on and on.
Again, it goes back to biological essentialism or determinism, as if whatever the sins of the father are visited upon the son through his genes. And that is absurd.
Yesterday, CNBC hosted a town hall meeting with the president. CNBC's John Harwood asked whether the president's unusual ethnic background made him a special target for criticism.
Do you think it's possible that because of your style or the unusual things about your background, your racial heritage, where you grew up, Ivy League education, that the fearful voters who are about to go to the polls in November think, yes, I hear him, he may get it intellectually, but he doesn't feel what I'm feeling?
Well, you know, here's my suspicion. I think that when the unemployment rate is still high and people are having a tough time, it doesn't matter if I was green, it doesn't matter if I was purple. I think people would still be frustrated.
There's the president yesterday, but here he is on Labor Day, famously before a crowd in Milwaukee. I'm not sure how this figures in. You listen.
Some powerful interests who have been dominating the agenda in Washington for a very long time, and they're not always happy with me. They talk about me like a dog. That's not in my prepared remarks. It's just, but it's true.
But it's true. Mark in Acton, Massachusetts. You're on with Henry Louis Gates.
Hi, Professor. How are you?
Fine, thank you, Mark.
You know, Dinesh D'Souza wasn't standing on a soapbox in Central Park barking at the moon. He was published in Forbes magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Newt Gingrich. In 2009, he was the single most frequent guest on Meet the Press.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blaming the media, present company excluded at times, because you certainly do a great job, for giving far more credence to these outlandish claims. And I would suggest that they wake up to the fact that you have a Republican Party and a right-wing media headed by Fox News that is determined to foment racial hatred, specifically to try to reject President Obama because he's a black American.
Mm-hmm.
And I would remind the media of what Lee Atwater told us in 1981. Lee Atwater, of course, is the former head of the Republican National Committee, served President Bush, President Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you start out in 1954 by saying the N-word, the N-word, the N-word. By 1968, you can't say the N-word. That hurts you. It backfires. So you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that. You talk about cutting taxes. All these things you talk about are totally economic things, but a byproduct of them is that blacks get hurt worse than whites.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on. This, don't get a hernia trying to explain the Tea Party. It's simply what Lee Atwater was describing. It's racism dressed up to be a little less obnoxious than it used to be.
I think that I would put it slightly differently. I think their principal motivation is to dethrone the president, is to cut into his power base. What's the quickest way to do that? Appeal to this stream that is subterranean. It's always already there in the history of the United States. This one thing that you can always go to, the part of the well that's always running. And what is that? Racism. It is always there. But also sexism is always there. Anti-Semitism is always there. I think if Barack Obama were Jewish, the right would be playing the anti-Semitism card. I think if Barack Obama were a woman, the right would be playing the anti-sexist card, or I'm sorry, the sexist card. I think that, but among these things, particularly in America, nothing is older than anti-black racism because of the history of slavery. So it is always available to play like a trump card. And that's what the right's doing. And they're doing it very effectively and very frighteningly.
You quote Adam Gopnik in your Tradition and the Black Atlantic saying the left's ambitions are political and its triumphs cultural, while the right's ambitions are cultural and its triumphs political.
Right. So true.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with scholar, journalist, and Black Studies star Henry Louis Gates, Jr., about our first African-American president and what roots mean now to Americans. Faces of America was his public television documentary and the title of his new book. He's got another as well, Tradition in the Black Atlantic, Critical Theory in the African Diaspora. In his documentary, Faces of America, Henry Louis Gates interviews Yale Black Studies scholar Elizabeth Alexander. Her grandfather came to America from Jamaica, settled in Harlem, but Gates discovers she's also descended from a couple of European kings. He asks her what it means to know that, and she answers that part of the American experience has been to ignore roots.
What does it mean? I would respond with a question. if you grow up not knowing any of this. And in fact, actually, in a culture that teaches you not necessarily to identify with any of that, not to dream that any of that could mean anything, could have any connection to you.
Let's celebrate roots. Let's not hang them around people's necks. Maybe Gretchen in Bristol, Vermont, you're on with Henry Louis Gates, Jr.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call, Henry. It's been a pleasure listening to the conversation.
Thank you.
And it's a great lead-in to what I was thinking about from the beginning of your conversation. I was raised to have a great respect for my ancestry and who I come from. My grandmother's family could trace their lineage back to some of the first boats over in Scotland. And my father was a proud Republican with Anglo-Saxon roots. And one thing I always grew up with was a great guilt for the African-Americans who I consider my peers, and that privilege was taken away from us. Third, how we could stand so proudly.
Gretchen, we're losing you, but I think we've got your point that for many African Americans, until a lot of this recent work, that they didn't have the privilege of knowing those roots.
Absolutely. I used to envy people who could get a coat of arms. Tom, we'd get the Sunday supplement from the Washington Post. Piedmont, West Virginia, is about 3 hours west of D.C. on the Potomac. So we get the Post and we get the magazine for $50.
Right, $39.95, $49.95.
Yeah, the Gates coat of arms. But I knew it was Cousin Bill's family, not Henry's family.
Or so you thought.
Right. But now we're lucky enough in the 21st century to live in an era where the Internet has made it possible to digitize all of these records, which would have taken you years to access.
Mm-hmm.
And with the developments in genetic research, we can combine these two forces, these two streams of analysis,
mm-hmm.
and analyze your family tree back further and deeper than ever before, no matter who you are.
No matter who, the slave trade doesn't still put a kind of a, you know, blank spot, the passage, the middle of the Atlantic passage in many African Americans' genealogy?
We can only trace an African American family on their African side
mm-hmm.
back to this side of the Atlantic,
okay.
back to the point
That's
where
something.
They're ancestor gets off the boat. But we couldn't do that before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite something. And when you think that, excuse me, our people have been coming here since 1620, that's a long way to be able to go back.
Mm-hmm.
Then once the paper trail ends for an African American, we can do a DNA test and tell you what ethnic group you're from.
As you did on yourself.
As we did. And we found out that I'm descended on my father's side from that African ethnic group called Ireland.
Okay.
And on my mother's side from that African ethnic group called England. But the most African Americans are mixed. If we went to a Boston Celtics game,
mm-hmm.
the Celtics play the Lakers.
Okay.
And we give them a DNA test at halftime.
Team or the audience?
the team. The black players on the court.
Yep, yep.
35%, Tom, descend from a white male ancestor. 35% would have a great-grandfather, a great-great-grandfather
mm-hmm.
who was European and most probably from the United Kingdom and more probably than not, Irish. That is extraordinary. 58% of the African-American people, 58% of the African-American people have at least 12.5% European ancestry. I have never tested for African-American Lives mm-hmm. 1 or 2 an African-American who was 100% black. Not one.
This is the American story. Let's go to Richmond, Kentucky, Alston. Alston, you are on the air with Henry Louis Gates, Jr.
Hi. Glad to be on. Well, I more have a question more than anything. One of the gentlemen said that we descend from Somalians around 50,000 years ago.
No, Ethiopia.
Ethiopia, Alston.
Ethiopia,
he said,
sorry.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Ethiopians. Mm-hmm. I was wondering how that can be proven when we have writings and scientific carbon dating proving that European Americans are traced to Nordic ancestry up to 100,000 years ago in Scandinavia.
Now, all human beings descend from Africa. All human beings. And the migrancy began about 50, 60,000 years ago. It's approximate. But I don't know what you're citing, but I can give you a couple sites. Look at the work of Spencer Wells, who's at the National Geographic. He runs the a huge genetic project there. But this is just commonly accepted now by scientists.
But Alston, what are you getting at there? Are you reluctant to share that ancestry? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. Yeah, I am definitely a
Teutonic
Celtic ancestry, but I am more about my Norse ancestry than anything else.
Yeah,
I mean, because I fit the appearance, you know. So I mean, I do lean toward that because I feel comfortable, obviously, in that group.
But does it bug you to acknowledge that, you know, we all came from a kind of a central spot way back?
No, but you are certainly Celtic, but your Celtic evolution came much later than 50,000 years ago. You see, much more recent. It's they're about, according to 23andMe.com, a genetics company, they use about 1,250 haplotypes. These are shared clusters of mutations in your genome, the simplest way to put it. And so you are absolutely Celtic. But the Celtic haplotype, as it were, probably evolved, I don't have the data here in front of me, but it could have been 15,000 years ago, 20,000 years ago. But all of these haplotypes descended from an African origin about 50,000 years ago.
Alston, can you live with that?
Even the Nordic ancestry descended from Africa, is what you're claiming.
All ancestries, my brother.
If you go back far enough.
I hate to break it to you, but all of us are African far enough back along. But you are definitely Celtic, just like...
For a long time.
Tom is Swedish.
Yeah.
You know, I'm descended from... an Irishman. I have the Unio haplotype, but the Unio haplotype is very, very recent compared to our ancient African ancestry. We're talking about ancient genetic ancestry, and our ancient genetic ancestry came from Africa. There is no doubt about it.
Alston, I appreciate your call. Thank you. David in Columbia, South Carolina, you're on the air with Henry Louis Gates.
Hello. I'd like to ask two quick questions. I'm a conservative Republican, and I'm pretty offended at people when they're losing the argument, always calling us racist or sexist or that long list that we heard that Republicans are just trying to do just to oppose a president with a Kenyan father. I opposed the Carter presidency and the Clinton presidency because of my beliefs. I would think it would be the epitome, or wouldn't it be the epitome, of racism to go easier on Obama than I did on Clinton and Carter, mm-hmm. Simply because he has a Kenyan father.
David, just for clarity, I don't think anybody's saying all opponents of President Obama are using that argument, but some seem to be, I guess.
Yeah, I think that you're
absolutely... Let me ask as well, when you continue to throw out the racism thing, aren't you afraid that you're really giving cover to the real racists? That at some point white people are going to say, well... You know, if I'm always going to be called a racist, then it really loses its meaning when you overuse it like that.
Well, I let me respond. First of all, I think you're absolutely right that you have to subject Barack Obama to the same kind of scrutiny that you did Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton. And that's your duty as a citizen and as a thinking person. I certainly do. So I don't expect you to do otherwise. However, when someone comes up with this bizarre theory that, what was the phrase, philandering, luo?
I don't have it all in front of me right now, but that's Dinesh D'Souza.
You know, I mean, please, it's ridiculous. And would someone, you have to ask yourself, have said that about Jimmy Carter's ancestors or John Kennedy's ancestors or Lyndon Johnson's ancestors? And second, would it have resonated in the same way that claims about race resonate in this society? I think the answer to both those questions is no. And on your latter point, I don't go around calling people racist. So, and I don't want to be called a racist myself. But there are certain discourses, certain actions which are sexist, which are anti-Semitic, which are Islamophobic, and which are racist. And I think that resorting to this demonization by creating this neo-Mau Mau figure, which somehow is in the White House, is playing to racist stereotypes that are inherent in American culture and in Western culture. That's my critique, and I hope that, sir, that you'll find that a fair critique.
But real criticism, you say, bring it on.
Yeah, bring it on. I mean, there are things I would criticize about Barack Obama or Bill Clinton, and I've done, at least in the latter, I've said it to his face.
Candace in Arlington, Massachusetts. Candace, you're on the air.
Yes, with all great respect for our guest, I just did want to disagree that if Obama promoted all the hate mail and anti-racist stuff, I don't think he would have been elected. So I think that was a wise move on his part, just if anything, to break through that color barrier in the White House.
Oh, I agree with that.
Back to Newt Gingrich. I agreed with the earlier gentleman who called and said that the media is sometimes very irresponsible and again, I'm an NPR fan, because you guys make an attempt to present both sides always, but even putting Newt Gingrich out there with an idea like that he's channeling, that somehow Obama's channeling some crazy ancestor, is really pretty much putting Newt on where he belongs, on the same level as the guy who was recently going to burn the Koran down in Florida.
But Candace, have you seen the cover of Forbes magazine? The cover, it's the president, big headline, How He Thinks. And it goes right back. I mean, it's not as though people are just putting Newt Gingrich up there. It's, you know, it's a major publication on the front.
Gingrich should not be given a platform, and it's appalling to me that he even has achieved that. This man who, you know, there's so many things that he's said. Like
he was Speaker of the House, Candace.
I know. It's shocking. It's shocking.
But it's Candace, it does give us an opportunity to, to quote the president from a recent event, make it a teachable moment about the nature of culture and biology and psychology and mental processes. At least it gives you, I'm a professor, it gives me an opportunity to go in the classroom and say, you thought this kind of race thinking ended 100 years ago, 50 years ago, or certainly by the end of World War II, didn't you? Look at Forbes magazine. It is race thinking par excellence. And it makes me embarrassed. It makes me embarrassed that a thinker as intelligent as Dinesh D'Souza could resort to this kind of terrible, terrible argument.
Candace, thanks for your call. Delphine in Boston. Delphine, you're on the air with Henry Louis Gates, Jr.
Hello, Tom and Dr. Gates. Thank you so much for taking my call. I wanted to say that I kind of saw this coming, the rebirth of these racial misunderstandings and tensions in the beginning of his campaign for president when we were calling him, which many people still do, the first African-American president. Mm-hmm. Generally, he is an American of Kenyan and, I guess, European descent. We weren't calling Kennedy. We were calling Kennedy the first Catholic president and the first, not the first European president. You know, so it's
right.
Not highlighting his racial and mixed racial ancestry, mm-hmm. which I think causes a lot of problems. From on his part as well, I think. So I'm a American of Jamaican and Lithuanian, Italian, and German ancestry, and I don't call myself an African American. I consider myself a Black American,
mm-hmm.
But I like to present the fact that I am what America stands for, the fact that I come from these different backgrounds, and I think the president should put his energy toward that. That would definitely dispel many of the issues we're looking at.
Delphine, thanks for your call. That's kind of the opposite of the Bob Herbert call this morning.
Well, no, but certainly immigration is the sign of the triumph of the American ideal. And that triumph is reflected in our genes, our genetic diversity, just mm-hmm. as in Barack Obama and in the person who just called. I agree with the previous caller that Barack Obama could not run as a Black candidate to get into the White House. That would not have worked. However, Bob Herbert's argument is then once you're elected, you can't act as if Black people don't exist, they're not part of your constituency, or that you don't have some kind of connection with them. And that's Herbert's argument, and I think that President Obama would do well to heed that. John Kennedy didn't ban Catholics, you know, from mm-hmm. his... He didn't pretend he wasn't Catholic. I'm not saying Barack Obama's
done it. He was at the Congressional Black Caucus ball just last week, isn't
right,
it?
And he made that appeal that they're mm-hmm. talking about me like a dog and I need mm-hmm. your, I, you know, I need your support.
You write in Tradition and the Black Atlantic, you write, there's a war going on. Pat Buchanan told us, you're quoting him, almost 20 years ago, a war for the soul of America. But you go on to conclude, and this is interesting about where all this may go. You say, but the war really is not for the soul of America. You write, Henry Louis Gates, the war is the soul of America? Interpret that for us.
This war is the soul of America. It is what we're all. It's the glorious thing about the American past. All of these competing ethnic identities came here, and for the first time in human history, created a harmonious society. Look, you can
sort
have,
of harmonious.
Well, we have hue and cry at the extremes, but fundamentally, the American people are good, decent, honest, non-racist, non-prejudiced people. I think that what we are terrified now because the economic pie is shrinking so dramatically, and I don't think that our leaders have spoken to those fears adequately.
Even the president?
Not yet. No.
Not enough?
I think that the president has to throw himself into an economic campaign as vigorously as he did the campaign to get elected as president of the United States. And he has to speak to these fears. Otherwise, the society will continue to be demonized by those who would use the worst aspects of our history against us.
Well, the politics are on the line with the midterm and soon enough, his own reelection. So we may see that energy coming back. Henry Louis Gates, Jr., it's great to have you with us. Faces of America, just out in hardback, and Tradition in the Black Atlantic, Critical Theory in the African Diaspora. Professor Gates, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. A lot of fun.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.